Hello and welcome to another episode of the Old Lady Speaks podcast on Black and White and Red All Over. I am your host, Danny, coming to you for episode number 50. And what an episode 50 we have. Guys, did you have a good weekend?
It was great.
I sure did. For non-footballing reasons as well, which I'll share later. But
uh-oh. Does it involve a ring, Chucks?
You follow me on Facebook? Yes.
No, I haven't.
Yes. We are engaged. Yes.
All right.
I actually missed the game for that reason. So.
If there is ever a reason to miss the game.
Yep. Sergio, did you also propose to your girlfriend this weekend?
No, I did not. She did get vaccinated, though.
Hey, that's good news too.
That's good news too.
That's a good alternative.
My wife also got her second shot today, yesterday rather. So yeah, that's a good one.
Well, on that note, let me bring in officially the crew here of Sam Lopresti. Hello, Sam.
Danny, Chucks's pessimism is defeated. The pessimism is defeated.
We've got the newly engaged Chucks, who is hopefully more optimistic about his marriage than Juventus's title chances this season.
Oh, hell yeah, I am. It's not difficult to be so. Now definitely a good weekend, and you know, cautiously optimistic about Juventus. You know, wildly optimistic about my marriage, obviously.
Well, congrats to you and Andrea. Obviously, we'll be celebrating, and we'll excuse you for the weekend. You aren't on the podcast on the wedding day.
Yeah, you know, you gotta pick and choose. You know? Yeah.
During an international break, right, Chucks?
Yeah. You know, yeah. I was like,
Don't do what I did and miss the first game of the season.
Yeah. You know, I knew I was gonna miss a game, but I was like, you know, I have faith. I have faith in this weekend. I know things are gonna be fine. And they were.
And last but not least, Sergio. Hello again, Sergio.
Hey, fellas. Don't really have that big of news. Just kind of bummed out that they didn't make Europa League, but whatever. It is what it is.
Yes, sir. The agent of chaos is definitely a little bit disappointed in that respect. So, as I have in my note here, point one, what a weekend it was. Point two, Marco Faroni. Hey, guys. Juventus are in the Champions League, well, at least for now, until UEFA decides something because of the Super League. So I guess we'll just go around the Zoom call real quick here before we get into the meat of everything that happened this weekend. Sam, what were your emotions like as you watched those 2 hours play out early Sunday evening your time?
It was way more tense than a 4-1 game ever has a right to be. Like I was feeling like Champions League knockout round levels of tension. It was roughly similar to what I was feeling the second leg against Porto, or you know, one of the other ones. It was more than a little dumb. I'm sitting here, you know, sweating bullets when the score is 4-0 after 47 minutes, and because I wanted to keep my notes relatively clear, I wasn't multi-screening, so I was also relying on what the broadcast was telling me as to when people were scoring. So I was kind of finding that out real time off camera as well, so to speak. But it's kind of hilarious because I always, you know, the Inter are frauds has been, you know, a fun meme for the blog for a long time, and we spent a lot of time last week keeping it alive. But you want to talk about the real frauds? How about Napoli just mentally bottling it at every single time? Napoli have a big match like this. They just completely mentally, you know, just brain fart, because I looked back on the game, on the Napoli-Verona game afterwards and watched portions of it, and they just weren't there. They were flat and unimpressive, and they scored their goal off a corner and then just let Faraone run coast to coast off of a ball a lot, very much like what Wojciech Szczesny did for Juve's fourth goal, and just score at a run. And there it was. I did immediately flip my phone on to the last couple of minutes after the final whistle in Bologna. And when Petagna hit that header and I heard it hit the stanchion, I thought it had gone in. For a quick second, And yeah. then I realized that it had gone over. And I, at that point, I was still alone at home. And at that point, I out and out yelled for a couple of minutes. But yeah, just really, it's that that was a level of nerve wracking that, and I mentioned this in my at the beginning of my recap, that we haven't really had to have at the end of a season. We've never gone, you know, over the course of these in the last 9 years, Juve's always won the title with at least one game to spare. So it's just been, you know, to have that kind of tension on the final day was, whew, it was a heck of a lot. And especially, you know, needing the other results to go your way, which they finally did. There was some tension there, and it was a hell of a payoff at the end.
Chucks, how were you feeling that early afternoon hours in your home?
Very sure, happy, I suspect, sure, given the fact sure that he was doing were, something else.
Yeah, never mind. Chucks, how were you feeling watching on delay as you saw everything play out? But no, which I have a follow-up question would be, were you able to not check the result live? So did you know going into it that Juventus had made the Champions League, or did you already know?
Well, so I did actually manage to basically follow the live commentary the last 20 odd minutes or so of live commentary. So I did. Yeah, we were done a little early, and you know, she was taking a nap and all that. So, you know, the overwhelming emotion of the day. But yes, I did catch about last 15 to 20 minutes or so of the live commentary. So I was following the play by play. Yeah, like you said, Sam, I mean, I can't tell you out of memory. I mean, I don't have any recollection of the last time in the league that it was this tense on a final match day, which really kind of brings back, you know, the good old days final match day drama. It's funny, I'm so used to saying deadline day from transfers of, you know, final match day drama like that, because the only similar type of tension we've had really was in, I mean, of course, in the Champions League and, like, you know, knockout games, which, you know, of course, Champions League knockout games are always going to be tense unless you've blown out the first leg, like, you know, 4-5-0 or something, which we never do. So, you know, of course not. So, you know, that, yeah, it was kind of a, you know, hearkening back to the old days of final day drama. And it is kind of funny. I mean, this is kind of weird to say, but the one thing I remember thinking was that, you know, people were like, oh, thank you, Hellas Verona, which obviously thank you. But I was kind of thinking, like, well, no, not thank you to them, because we tied against them 1-1. If we'd won that game, they'd let us win that game. We would have had 2 points, and we wouldn't have gone through all the shenanigans on the final match day. So no, thank you, Hellas Verona. It's you getting back to what you were supposed to do. So, well, there you go. A bit of a twisted perspective on things. But yeah, I mean, it was dramatic stuff. I genuinely couldn't believe it. I'd accepted, because the game that I was personally more focused on was the Milan-Atalanta game, because, I mean, I'll say it, I had basically written off the Napoli-Verona game. In my head, I'd written that one completely off. So yeah, I was looking at the Atalanta against Milan game, and, you know, first half was just, sounded like it was calm, and then they got the penalty. I was like, oh, why? You know, I was like pissed about that. I was just kind of reading back on all that. And then it was just still 1-0, and I was like, Atalanta will they'll grab an equalizer. And then obviously I saw the Napoli score being equal, or Hellas Verona equalizing, but I thought, oh man, Napoli going to score a second goal. Like, I'm not even going to get my hopes up on that one. But then remarkably, they didn't, you know, and it just stayed 1-1. I was like, surely not. I was preparing myself for a 95th minute winner for Napoli. I swear to you, I was preparing for that so much. And it just didn't happen.
It almost happened, Chucks.
Well, it did almost happen.
It almost happened.
Yeah, it did almost happen, indeed. But yeah, remarkably, it didn't. And then, you know, Gattuso being sacked now, which I feel for Gattuso. He's a good guy. And I think he's...
He'll land on his feet.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. I mean, he really has done his best with this team. I think he's done a good job with Napoli overall. And, you know, again, he'll land on his feet. Because it's funny, because I do remember that one game, I think the league game that they beat us in, I remember them people saying, like, oh, this was the game that might, you know, get Nap or Gattuso sacked and then they won it. And I was like, you're welcome. We saved your job. But yeah. And I also heard that De Laurentiis, he had basically sacked him over Twitter. Like he just sent out a tweet saying like, hey, And I was like, man, are you serious? You know, like not even supposedly he hadn't communicated an official statement or anything. He just put out a tweet first. And then, you know, obviously all the official statements after. I'm like, really, is that the standards we've set nowadays? Like, that's how things go. But anyway, I digress. That's
the De Laurentiis standard.
Well, yeah, exactly. That probably is him. But yeah, so here we are, you know, fourth place. It's strange. I mean, never did I think, A, I would be celebrating a fourth place finish, and B, that I would be glad that we would be the beneficiaries of that relatively recent rule change of Italy getting four guaranteed spots in the Champions League. I remember looking at that, I'd be like, psh, yeah, this if we'll ever need that. And then here we are. We're the beneficiaries of that, which is just, I don't know. It's the poetic just insanity of this season. It's been a trip. It's been quite a trip.
Yeah, unlike all of you guys, I was not stressed at all. I was just like, whatever happens.
Yeah, because you wanted the Europa League. Of course you weren't
fine.
I wanted
the Europa League. I was like, if they win, that's cool. Yeah, I was actually just happy that they were having a good game. It was just kind of like if you take into account, like if you forget about everything, all the, you know, Europe drama, it was just a pretty stress-free, just good game. Just one of those games that we haven't really seen as much as we wanted this year. Just them blowing out a team that they should blow out. I mean, that's really what it was. And I was mostly interested also in the whole, you know, why didn't Cristiano Ronaldo play and all of that. But, you know, I guess you don't really need him when you can just, you know, take out Paulo Dybala and Alvaro Morata. And those are two pretty good guys too. And I mean, I was just really happy to see them end the season on a high note, especially because, you know, now that I think earlier on the season, I think around March, where it was pretty clear we were not going to win the league title. I think it was my opinion, and I think it was kind of like an opinion shared by a lot of people that follow the team, that if we make Europe and win the Coppa Italia, and, you know, with how crazy this year was because of everything, that's fine. That's a decent result. That's a decent season. That's okay. And it's going to be interesting for me just moving forward. Obviously this summer is going to be one of those summers. It looks like it, that they did manage to do that despite all the lows, all the, especially after the Milan game where, you know, people were just losing their minds, myself included. Everyone really thought that this team was cooked, and they came back. They, you know, they got the results they needed from themselves and from other teams. Napoli choked. Napoli did what they do, and they're in the Champions League, right? I mean, I think obviously we're going to have a lot of, and I don't want to spoil what we'll have as a block coming up, but we're going to have a lot of, you know, season recaps and season postmortems and whatnot. But it really is going to be interesting how, you know, how this season is graded. If they do maintain the Pirlo project, if they don't, it seems like, you know, if you were on Twitter, it seemed like every other week it was like, no, he's definitely leaving, he's definitely staying. The same goes for Ronaldo, the same goes for Dybala, the same goes for pretty much everyone in the team. Like, they're definitely staying, they're definitely leaving. It would just flip-flop.
Same goes for Agnelli.
Yeah, it would just flip-flop. If they won that week, then everyone was staying. And if they lose that week, then everyone's going. Like, you know, who knows what's going to happen. So it's going to be an interesting summer, you know, just strictly speaking about this game. It was a good game. I enjoyed it. It was a great to leave the season on a high note. Great to see Carlo Pinzoglio get his minutes, which is a great tradition that I hope that never ends. And he actually had a couple really good saves, which was just, wow, he's not only just like a cool guy to have around, like he's actually a really good goalkeeper too. So, you know, it was nice to see the team celebrating at the end of the season, even if it wasn't as they usually do it. It's just a nice way of kind of putting a ribbon on the year, and in a year that was, you know, very, very, very weird, very challenging. But, you know, at least they managed to not fulfill every expectation they had, but to have what I consider a relatively decent year, everything, you know, considering everything.
Yeah, I think the most interesting thing to me, and you can tell that it's suddenly the off season, is that now you're waking up and you're almost expecting team news to be there. You're waiting for, almost like when Juve were going through a rash of injuries at certain points of the season. It's like, okay, is the Pirlo news going to come down today? Is an announcement on said player going to come down today? Obviously, we're looking at tributes for Buffon and the like, and all that today. But I woke up this morning thinking, okay, is there going to be something with Pirlo? And that's how it's going to be the next few days until we actually get something. And I guess we can talk a little bit about the Copa first. But yeah, I think that's the biggest thing now is, what do they do with Pirlo? Does them backing in, if we want to say it that way, backing into the Champions League with the last day of the season escape, does that mean he's getting another year? I mean, they have backed him in the past, but like we have pointed out on this podcast, they also backed Mauricio Sarri, and obviously we know how that turned out the day after the season ended. So it's just one of those things where this is very much now suddenly a day-by-day thing where we're waiting to see just what direction they go with the manager. So.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
On that note, as Sergio mentioned, the Coppa Italia was a trophy he would like to see Juventus win, and they won it with a pretty damn good second half against Atalanta, the previously very informed Atalanta. And I guess, it was a pretty good time for Juventus to find some of their best form of the season, because they needed it, didn't they?
Oh, yeah. And it really was a game of two halves. I mean, when Kulusevski scored the opening goal, it was very much against the run of play. Atalanta were seemingly popping up with a chance every couple of minutes. But when they came out in the second half, they just clamped down. And like, this wasn't just like a question of maybe like bringing it back to the middle. Like, Juve were by far the better team in the second half, which is not something that you would have expected. Pirlo beat Gasperini coaching wise. All the players were just, bringing it another level on the field. Chiesa and Kulusevski were out of this world. And you bring back a trophy to I called it a consolation prize in midweek, but it kind of is, given everything that you expect out of this team. But going from the second half of that Atalanta game into the Bologna game, like, that's the football that Pirlo wants out of everybody, and that's the way that he wanted this entire season to go. And like I said against Inter, in the last episode, why did it take so damn long? But all of a sudden, you just saw this pretty dramatic upswing in how the team played. And, maybe that's just the desperation. Maybe it's, waiting for, knowing what they needed to do. But I thought that it was a really, really substantive step for a team that really needed to make one in those last couple of games. And here we are now talking about what basically qualifies as the success that they could have achieved by the end of the season.
Yeah, I did watch this game, so I can speak a little more to this one. Well, at least I caught the last, missed the first 20 minutes or so. But yeah, definitely, like you said, Sam, I mean, just a game of two halves. You almost think about it like, in the Champions League final against Real Madrid, how just reversed it was, where in that game, obviously, we had that great first half. And then the second half, we all know what happened. So yeah, this was basically the reverse of that. And it does make you think, which is better, to start poorly and then end well, or vice versa, which I don't know. I mean, that's kind of, I guess, a question to debate sometime. But it's also interesting to note, just like our games against Atalanta this season, you know, we've played three games against them this season. Honestly, I think we've played really well against Atalanta overall this season, which is tough against a team as good and as extremely proactive as Atalanta is, and just a team that has given so many other teams such a hard time, that we played really, really well against them throughout the season. With so, despite all the problems we've had, and this, despite all the especially defensive imperfections we've had this season. And, you know, at the end of the day,
like
we've
marking
only...
Malinovsky?
Oh, yeah, yeah, that bloke. Yeah, yeah, he has a knack for scoring against us. I mean, good, great player, obviously. But, yeah, I mean, so we've only conceded, what is it, two goals against them this season. I think the first game was a 0-0, or might have been a 1-1. No, I think it was a 0-0. So
it was 1-1.
Oh, it was 1-1. Yes. And then we've only conceded, let me see. Two goals. Three goals. Math. Three goals against them this season, which, yeah, I mean, that's not bad at all for a team that scores as much as Atalanta does. To only concede, you know, one goal in basically each game against them, I mean, that's, yeah, definitely not bad. So I'm quite proud of that one. And, you know, one of the goals was that deflected strike by it was Malinovsky that, you know, deflected off, I think it was Alexandro, which I mean, that was just an unlucky goal. I think that game deserved a tie. I think he deserved a point from that one. But yeah, I mean, really just very optimistic signs from that game, in the Coppa Italia game. Just the level of control we had of the game in the second half was just, I mean, I haven't seen that in a long time against a really good team. So, you know, hey, if we can just carry that into every single game we play, wouldn't that be nice? But and that also kind of continues that theme that I think I'd mentioned last time, of just how well we played against good teams, with, you know, obviously some exceptions, you know, the Milan 3-0 loss against Milan obviously being a glaring exception, but how well we've played against, you know, top six teams this season. And, you know, also in the Champions League group stage against Barcelona, the first game being poor, but then the second game being amazing. We've generally just done well against top teams, but just really, really poorly against the, you know, the lower teams. So that just, I mean, obviously we're going to do season review next episode, but that's just one of those really big takeaways that continues for me from that Coppa Italia game. Like, wow, we are capable of good things against good teams, but why is it once again so, yeah, inconsistent?
Yeah, and I think not to bring it back to the Andrea Pirlo situation, which I'm sure we will get into, I don't know if later on this episode or, you know, on the next one, but I think if you want to make the case for him as a long-term solution as the manager, you do look at his record, not only against good teams, obviously, you know, throwing out the Milan game, but against in their second go around, because I think that was also a theme that you could see with this club, in which they didn't do the best in the first go around against, you know, the good teams. I'm even including, you know, the, you know, FC Barcelona, which, well, yeah, we might split hairs about whether or not they're a good team, but, you know, we saw them really, really take it to Juve in that first game. Then Juve really took it to them in the second one. And we saw the same against Inter, right? Like in the first game against Inter, I would argue it was the one of the few games where they were just completely outplayed. And then in every other, you know, the next three games, it was two wins and a draw against the, you know, the now Italian champions. You saw the same against Atalanta. I thought that showed a lot of growth, that final, that Coppa Italia final showed a lot of growth from the team and from Andrea Pirlo himself, because the team just knew how to handle that game. They knew how to play Atalanta finally after two times playing them. They knew how to beat them. And that was just, you know, hold the line in the first half, soak up that pressure, and then just blitz them in the second half when they're more tired, because that's how Atalanta plays. And they did it to perfection. Like, I agree with you guys that this wasn't one of those things that's kind of like half and half, any team could have won. I think that second half, Juve completely took over. They completely blew them out, and they were very, like, rightfully so, the victors in that game. So I do think that it's another game, and it's one of those things that I mentioned in the graphic, right? Like, do you just make your season long evaluation of your project, of your players, of your coach based on the results that you got this last couple of weeks, or on the season long thing? Because Juventus really did close after that Milan game, which is an atrocity. They really did close out pretty strong, and they had some of their best performances that we've seen from them in the whole year. I think that second half against Atalanta was arguably the best half that they had in the entire year, especially considering the opponent they were facing. And then the game that we were just talking about, the Bologna game, was also one of the better performances that we've seen from them. And it's Bologna, whatever, but we were seeing this team drop points left and right to teams like Bologna early in the year. So I just think it was one of those moments that you definitely see the team and see how they play and see how Pirlo coaches, and you can definitely talk yourself into, okay, maybe there's something here. Maybe, you know, there is a chance that this could work out long-term. So again, it was great for the team, just because to lift a trophy at the end of the year, I think that's, you know, sometimes we as fans tend to, you know, minimize, you know, certain competitions, and we, you know, we say like, oh, the Supercoppa is a glorified friendly, and oh, the Coppa Italia, like, who cares? But this does mean something for those players, and this does mean something for the teams. Like, for example, for Federico Chiesa, for example, a young guy, this is this first season that he's actually winning stuff at the senior level. I think that means a lot to those type of players, that to actually win something, to actually win a trophy. I think it builds a winning culture, especially for those young guys that haven't really been part of the success of this decade. So I just think it was a great game, especially in the second half, as I said, and just a great way to close out the year, you know, despite and regardless, whatever you want to call the Coppa Italia. I think it's always good to win trophies, and there's going to be a patch for next season in the Juve kit, which is good. We've had a patch for the last 10 years. At least that tradition, you know, keeps going.
And you look at arguably the three guys who celebrated the hardest, not named Carlo Pinzolio, after Juve qualified for the Champions League Sunday: Paulo Dybala, Leonardo Bonucci, Giorgio Chiellini. So just because they've achieved a whole hell of a lot, you could tell that this meant a lot to them too. And I'm not trying to, you know, throw shade towards Sergio, but you know, even the older guys were appreciating how Juve closed the season. So yeah, it was pretty impressive to see just how, I mean, we were talking about it after the Milan game on the pod. It was sounding like their season was over, their Champions League hopes were over, and the Coppa Italia, knowing how Atalanta was playing, was not all that optimistic. And look, four games later, Juve won all of them. They looked relatively good in all of them, and they've got a trophy and Champions League spot because of it.
I wanted to tack something that Chuck said when he talked about the way that Juventus had controlled that second half. And, you know, match control is a word that it hasn't come up on the podcast in a while, but it did a lot under Maurizio Sarri. And it's one that Chuck's was especially using. And we'd seen Juventus control games before, but it was almost always in a reactionary way. The first game against Lazio, until that goal out of nowhere by Caicedo in stoppage time that knocked that pulled a point out for Lazio, Juventus pretty much controlled that game. They hadn't let Lazio really threaten the goal, but they were defending and countering. The game against Roma in January, same thing. They very much controlled that game. Roma had very few genuine opportunities to score, but again, it was a counterattack game. They were defending very much. What we hadn't really seen Juventus do, except for maybe the first half of the opening game of the season against Sampdoria, was to control games on their own initiative, was to control games with an attack, with the ball and with that high press. And all of a sudden in the second half against Atalanta, and especially in against Bologna, that was how those two games ended up playing out, was Juventus taking complete control and doing it by doing it themselves and not by hanging back and reacting to and playing defense and reacting to the way that the other team played. And they were even doing, you could even say that that was in some ways what they were doing against Inter before Rodrigo Bentancur got sent off. And that, if you want to talk about, like Sergio, you were saying, the, you know, a growth aspect of Andrea Pirlo and of the team in general, I think that is, I mean, obviously very belated, but that's something that I think you can hang your hat on in terms of looking forward. And if you want to go with this project, and of course there are a lot of variables about this project, you know, does Andrea Agnelli survive the coming Exor shareholders meeting, which I believe happens later this week, as president of Juventus, after everything that's happened with the Super League and this season and the project in general the last 3 years? Does Pirlo survive as coach regardless of who ends up running Juventus? But if you're looking at this project and saying we're going to keep this project going, that's what you can hang your hat on, is that all of a sudden you start seeing Juve actually taking control and doing it the way they want to take control. And if you can do that next year, then you've got a team that, you know, with a few better players and maybe a little bit better roster construction, can start making the people in Milan sweat a lot more hard.
It's also pretty remarkable, as you're just mentioning with Agnelli, because Lord knows if we're even allowed to play Champions League next year, you know, which is just,
there's the other monkey wrench in the whole thing, but
which is just crazy. Imagine going through all this drama, all this headache, all this last match day drama, just to be like, oh, sorry, you are dismissed. So that would be that'll be very painful. Plus, with this Serie A, I mean, I think the FIGC president said, you know, we might be expelled as well. So are we even going to play football at all next year?
I mean, we're taking a year off, Chuck, all of us.
Yeah, I'll take a year off. Just go on, you know, play in Ibiza or something, you know. Hey.
All right. Before we get to Twitter questions, wanted to just touch on the offseason a little bit. We were mentioning how a second ago, Sam, was how many questions there are still lingering, even though Juventus had a very good weekend. So it seems weird to think that Juventus just did get into the Champions League, yet I believe it was Totally Football Podcast I was listening to earlier today. They were talking about how so many managerial positions, including Juventus, are just completely up in the air right now. And obviously a lot of what Juventus does hinges on what they view of Pirlo. So I guess the long way of getting to it is, do you think Juventus will keep Pirlo? Not necessarily, do you want to keep Pirlo?
I'll take that one first. So that's kind of a pragmatic versus emotional question, I guess, like in terms of, you know, do I think they will? That is pragmatic. Do I want them? That's the emotional kind of point. So yeah, of course, I'll take the pragmatic answer. And I imagine we'll expand on this in later podcast episodes too. But yeah, do I think they will? Again, from a pragmatic point of view, probably yes. Mostly because of money, really. I mean, from what I know, Pirlo's pretty cheap as a coach. Obviously, he just started. So that plus, I think Sarri is still on our payroll quite remarkably. I mean, that is the biggest stealth mission I've ever seen in my life, by the way. You should be an MI6 agent, Maurizio Sarri, because that is impressive. But fair play to him. Obviously, he's a contract, so I mean, hey, he's within his legal right to receive the money. So yeah, I mean, you know, from a financial perspective, obviously there's all the losses from COVID. Managers are, I've learned recently, apparently extremely expensive. Who knew? That's something I never thought about. I always think about player salaries. I never thought about manager salaries, which is just so funny. But yeah, and again, alternatives. I know we mentioned Zidane last time around. I still think he's going to take a break, but I mean, I don't know. It's just kind of my hunch. And also, I think Paratici, he did say that if Pirlo, or if the team makes top four, that, you know, he will keep his job. I think I'm pretty sure he explicitly said so. So, I mean, hey, he'll have to stick to his word, no? I mean, we already have enough PR problems, so let's not get enough.
They didn't stick to their word with Saudi last year, so
yeah,
that's
true. Where talk is cheap, isn't it?
Yeah, right. But managers, as you said, aren't. And I think that is going to have a big issue. Like, I think I mentioned this last week on the podcast that Juventus over the last 2 years has spent 40 million euros or something like that on managers that weren't actually managing the team, you know, and unless Sadi picks up one of the jobs in the Premier League or something, like I know Tottenham and Arsenal were both kind of sniffing around him. He's going to sit and collect another year's worth of salary for Juve. And like you said, Chucks, that's going to, you know, that could factor heavily into, you know, do you want to pay even more dead money and add yet another manager to the payroll? I mean, it's not like, you know, it's not like anybody would be paying, like, you know, Conte money for Pirlo's replacement. Conte, and to give you a sense of how much Conte gets paid right now by Suning, he gets paid more than any Juventus player other than Ronaldo. He gets 10 million euros.
Wow. Damn, that's crazy.
But I think also a lot of it has to do, will have to do with, you know, what I mentioned before about Andrea Agnelli. If John Elkann decides to replace Andrea Agnelli as the chairman of Juventus, as the president of Juventus, I could see a new president deciding to clean house and get a person that they could consider their guy, whoever that person is. But right now, unless they get a really good opportunity, unless there's an opportunity that they can't refuse, I think right now the better money is on Pirlo staying, simply because everything else is going to be so dang expensive, and Juventus already is going to have to spend a whole lot of money on the squad if they want to make it more competitive. You know, unless Cristiano Ronaldo's recent Instagram posts can be taken as a sign-off, which if you read that post, it certainly could be interpreted that way. We'll see. But yeah, I think, like you said, Chuck, just this could end up being a money decision as much as it is a project and technical decision. Although it also then goes to figure out, you know, whether or not Paratici and Nedved will also be coming back. Like you said, Danny, so much stuff going on.
Yeah, I guess we're going to go chalk here. I do think he's going to stay unless, you know, and I'd be surprised if they were so just dumb and they just didn't let the Super League thing die. Because, and, you know, I'm assuming that they're not going to be just dumb and let the whole thing die. And then next year's Champions League and Serie A. And I think because of that, it's just easier to kind of give Pirlo another shot, to kind of give him a chance for next season, especially because, number one, I don't think there's anybody out there that would be an immediate upgrade at a reasonable price. Because, you know, we've heard about Allegri, we've heard about Zidane. I just don't see those names really panning out, especially the latest report by I think, Romeo Agresti that Allegri is very much waiting for the Real Madrid job, and that's kind of like the only job that he would take on. I just, who else are you going to bring on that's going to be, you know, relatively affordable and a clear improvement over Pirlo? I don't know, Gattuso, like, is that name really, like, is that really exciting? Not really. I think just because they made the Champions League, I think they're going to keep the project going. Whether or not that's the correct call, I don't know. I mentioned it in the earlier graph back. I think if you really believe that Pirlo is the guy going forward, I think you kept him even if they didn't make Champions League. And if you don't really think that he's the guy, I think you fire him even if they do make the Champions League, right? Like, you make your assessment based on the whole season, not just because Napoli choked it away. So just because of that, I think they're pretty, like, yeah, they're pretty much done for the moment changing coaches. I think Pirlo will stay. Whether that's the correct call, I guess time will tell. But at the very least, you're giving him a fair shot by giving him another season and actually having, you know, a preseason, actually having that time to work with the team and to actually have his own players. I think I mentioned it before, but if you want to, you know, try to defend the Pirlo year, the three guys that we know that he asked for, that he actually wanted to be part of the team, were Alvaro Morata, Federico Chiesa, and Weston McKennie. And at one point or another, those three dudes were arguably the best player on the team, right? Like at one point or another, all three of them panned out. So if you want to be positive and say, yeah, this project is definitely going to work out, is you give him a chance, you give him an offseason, you actually build the team for what he wants to do, and then see if you know, if he can bring Juve back to the Italian championship, right? So we'll see. But I agree with you guys that I do think he stays. I do think he stays another year.
All right, let's get to some Twitter questions here. First one will be an easy one and a quick fire one for all three of you guys from at Expendion. Who is the favorite for the Ballon d'Or? Is it Matthijs de Ligt or is it Federico Chiesa?
Chiesa.
Second that.
Wow, Dutchman going against his own guy.
I'm a man of reason.
Yeah, I think Chiesa just because he's an offensive player. But overall, I think de Ligt is going to, I think he's going to end up being the better player out of the two in the long run. But they usually don't really consider defensive guys that much. So yeah, Chiesa, I guess.
I agree with that, actually, Sergio. But I guess in terms to expand on that, besides a one word answer I gave, I think in terms of contribution to the team this season, absolutely Chiesa. I mean, he's bailed us out pretty hard. De Ligt has still been good, and well, I'm writing season recaps on season ratings on center back, so I'm going to be rating him more elaborately. But I mean, I think De Ligt was very strong this season. But just in terms of marginal, to use a technical term, the marginal contribution to the team, I think Chiesa was probably a greater contribution just because defensively we were so poor this season, which obviously is not just De Ligt's fault / not just the defense's fault. It's a, you know, a unit's problem. But yeah, I think Chiesa definitely a greater contribution.
All right, from A. Finlay 89, if Zidane and Allegri are unavailable, what would our resident Wolves / Raul Jimenez fan Sergio Romero think of Juventus replacing Pirlo with Nuno Espirito Santo, assuming they actually plan on replacing Andrea Pirlo?
Yeah, exactly. Making that assumption after the three of us said that he probably wouldn't, but still, even if they made
hardy,
that
hardy, hard.
That's a guy that obviously, I think Wolves had a pretty bad season this year. I think they finished 13 or 12 or something in the Premier League. So it's not a great season, but it was also a weird season for them with Jimenez being injured a lot of the time because of that, you know, quite literally, like he broke his skull. So tough, but he's on his way back. But I think that's an interesting name because I think he did get a lot of that team. He was putting them in positions of, you know, making Europa League and things like that. And actually, they had a pretty deep run for the Europa League in 2019, actually. They made the quarterfinals, you know, which is usually not a result that you would expect from a team such as Wolves. They put a couple scares in the big clubs in England. I think he's a good manager for sure. But again, is he a clear-cut improvement over Pirlo? I don't know. And even if you bring him in, you know, you're, again, it's another coach. It's your, you know, fourth coach in 4 years. I just don't think they make that decision. I just don't think they will take that risk unless there's someone out there who's an absolute slam dunk. Like if Zinedine Zidane is available, they won't care that it's going to be the fourth coach in 4 years, because that's exactly a slam dunk type of move that you make when that guy is available, right? But other than that, like other than a real, real marquee name type of guy, I just don't see them taking a shot on a guy like him when the economics are what they are and when you've already had a bunch of turnover. I just don't see it. Would it be a horrible decision? No, but I just don't think it's something that it's in the cards.
From at Houdat 858. I've noticed that Rabiot catches a lot of flack for his unfocused play at times, and it's warranted. But am I wrong for thinking that he should stay over the likes of Aaron Ramsey or Bentancourt or Federico Bernardeschi?
You are not. I've been banging that drum all season long.
Go on and bang it.
You are not alone. Hey now, Chuck. He's the best one. I mean, I don't know if the best one, but I think he's just so talented and he's just been put in such a rough space. I just hope, I really, really hope they don't let him go, because he is exactly the type of player that can be a piece in a really good midfield.
I certainly think that over Bernardeschi and Ramsey, yes. I'm still relatively intrigued by the idea of what Bentancur might be able to do in as an attempt at a bounce back year next year if he's employed as a straight up mezzala with a more capable regista behind him, a Locatelli type guy, because you know it's clear that whatever Sarri wanted out of him in that position he could do. But whatever Pirlo wants out of him in that position is apparently different and a little bit beyond his scope. But if he were to, it would not surprise me if Bentancur had a bounce back season next year, because I still think he is a very, very good midfielder. That being said, I also agree with Sergio that if you could keep Rabiot, because, you know, despite the mental lapses, then he also has, you know, games like he had against Bologna, games like he had against Atalanta this week, you know, when he's on, he really can be a magical player at times, you know, just bombing through that midfield and running through space and creating problems. You know, it's like Blaise Matuidi, but with ball skills. I would very much like to see him as a piece next season, if he's not sacrificed on the altar of capital gains, as to borrow Sergio's phrase. But yeah, you're not wrong. You're not wrong.
He's never wrong. He's never wrong, Sergio. No, I have, I did say something similar about Rabiot in terms of his comparison to Matuidi, in terms of, I'd slightly drawn a different parallel in the sense that I think I said that he's similar to Matuidi in the sense that, you know, by himself, I think he's not like, I mean, a star player or anything, because he's not supposed to be. But I think if you put him in a really just well-functioning unit, he will be an extremely useful player. And frankly, basically, yeah, a star in terms of his, yeah, just usefulness to the team. Not in terms of scoring goals or laying on, you know, assist after assist, but just in terms of keeping the unit functioning, the midfield unit functioning. I think Matuidi did that so well. Like when the team was just, playing well and just functioning well, Matuidi was just so useful in terms of defensive skills and just tactical contributions. Yeah, connecting, you know, doing the dirty work in midfield. I think Rabiot is similar in that sense. And just like you said, Sam, slightly tidier on the ball than Matuidi is. Yeah, so I mean, overall, I think, yes, obviously keep him over Ramsey. I mean, Ramsey should, you know, frankly, show him the door, because yeah, I mean, I think that's done and dusted. Mr. Terminator, white hair Bernardeschi can also, man, what a haircut. Which probably Terminator is not the right parallel, but I just said it anyway. But he should probably also leave. But yeah, Bentancur and Rabiot, I'm still torn between the two, like letting one or the other go. I know in some really, really hopeful world of mine, I think surely the two can function together in a three-man center midfield. And would it be possible to have like an Artur, Bentancur, Rabiot central midfield? Would it work? I mean, I would just hope so. I think that would be great, but I would have to think more about that if that would work. But I think that would be such a perfect solution. But definitely the two of them in central midfield, Bentancur and Rabiot, clearly doesn't work. We've, you know, debated that ad nauseum.
All right, final one here from David Desper at the True ROIC. Are you fearful that because of the success Juve have had since the Sassuolo game, not much will fundamentally change? Should heads still roll in the front office and the boardroom and the pitch? How much and who? Also, can we get a therapy session for going for Gigi Buffon's departure?
That last one is what Danny and I are going to be doing after the after we stop recording.
Yes, exactly. Miss you,
Dad. Yeah, miss him again. If anybody, I mean, I might as well my feelings on that might as well just repost my article from when he left the first time. Just inspirational on so many levels, sporting and otherwise, with, you know, his take on takes on mental health, which are big for me as somebody who suffers from anxiety conditions like that. But as for whether or not heads should roll, yes, heads should still roll. Like, Sir Ilan, bring me his head. Specifically saying that specifically about Paratici, bring me, like, you know, holding it up and putting it on a spike. I think that Paratici is fundamentally he is not a good sporting director. He is very good. I've said this before. He is very good at what he did under Beppe Marotta. He is not good at being Beppe Marotta. I do not think he has he can conceive properly of how to actually build a team. He just signs guys that are, you know, he signs really good footballers, but he takes no heed of how those really good footballers might fit together in the context of a team. And I think you need somebody for that. Who was who was it that Juventus were connected to in that regard just a day or two ago? Somebody from one of the French teams. Does anybody remember that?
The guy from Lille?
The guy from Lille, that's it. Yeah.
Yeah, he's been connected with a lot of teams.
He has been connected with a lot of teams. But, and, you know, and also, and, you know, Lille is not the kind of, like, you know, higher level, you know, buyer team type. You know, you could say that there's all the possible parallel is when, you know, Monchi came from Sevilla to Roma and he was, you know, conditioned at Sevilla to get guys, build guys up, flip guys, especially within La Liga. And that's kind of the attitude at Lille, even though they just won the title. That's, you know, that's a Leicester City moment kind of in Liga. But I'd like that. Or if you're going to keep Paratici on the staff, the suggestion that maybe hiring Marcello Lippi as kind of an overall football czar that Paratici would report to, that's an idea that I could get behind. But he's got to be he can't be the guy making the decisions anymore, in my opinion, because I just don't think he can conceive of how to build a functional unit out of all the talent that the team has. And do I think Andrea Agnelli needs to end up resigning just based on the magnitude of the failure of the Super League alone? I think so. I just don't think you can fail that hard and keep your job.
Yeah, I actually agree with Sam in the sense that should there be changes? Yes. Will there be changes? I don't think so. Just because, especially because of what you said last, Sam, in the sense of, I think if you don't ax Agnelli, which all the reports seems like he won't get axed, I think everyone's going to stay. I think they're going to run it back. Do they deserve to get fired? Agnelli, most definitely, yes. You know, whatever your thoughts about the Super League is, the matter of fact is that it went horribly for everyone involved, especially with the three teams that were apparently still in the Super League somehow. Like, it's hard to really foresee something going worse than the Super League rollout. So I do think that he should get the axe, but it just doesn't look like it will. But yeah, I just don't see them making change. Like, if Agnelli stays and I just don't see them making any changes, I think they're just going to run it back and give this whole project another go. Is that the right call? Probably not. But, you know, I can understand trying not to rock the boat too much. But I do think that they won't make any changes. I do think that, you know, they won't rock the house too much.
I think the biggest domino, apart from Agnelli, is Cristiano Ronaldo.
Yeah, that's true.
If Cristiano Ronaldo decides he's done with Turin, then I think we will see major roster changes just based on the money that frees up alone.
Not even the money. I think it's also the expectations, right? Like, yeah. if you're no longer a team with Cristiano Ronaldo on your team, you're no longer, like, you know, you're no longer all the massive expectations that Cristiano Ronaldo involves. You know, you no longer have that. So I think that gives you a lot more leeway to kind of, you know, make those type of changes. I do agree with that.
Have we figured out where his cars have gone?
I don't know.
Yeah. Not yet.
Maybe they're somewhere in space with Elon Musk's Teslas. They're still floating around somewhere there, you know. Still are.
All right. On that note, we will wrap things up, as I've been doing the last couple of weeks before we officially go here. Shout out to the Juventus women. Perfect 22 for 22.
Perfect season.
So if you're wondering if a Juventus team will be wearing the Scudetto patch on their jerseys next season, yes, they will. And it will be the Juve women.
Speaking of, did you see how fast the Coppa Italia thing got onto the new shirts at on the J store? That was very fast.
They're quick with that kind of stuff. They know that's where the money lies. Let's just say that. So 22 for 22 and a proper send-off for manager Rita Guarino, who stepping aside. She got a 5-1 win over Inter in her finale. So I think it's always a good day when Juventus can beat Inter. So thanks for a great 4 years to her. And for the Juventus women, another dominant season in Serie A. So on that note, thank you all for your Twitter questions, as always. Shout out the couple people who asked about Pirlo staying or going. Obviously, we touched on that before we officially opened up the Twitter question window on this episode. If you want to send us a Twitter question, feel free to send it over to us at Juventus Nation. Even though for the next few days, we are unofficially a Hellas Verona fan account on the Twitter machine. You can also follow us on Facebook at Black and White and Rattle Over. Same thing goes for Apple Podcasts and all the other podcasting platforms. If you listen to us on Apple Podcasts or iTunes, feel free to leave us a review and all of that good stuff. So, for the final time in the 2020-21 season, say that three times fast. For Samuel Presti, for Chucks, and for Sergio, this is Danny saying thank you very much for listening. It's officially off season, so we'll talk to you guys next week.